podcasting from the Instructional Development Center, Room 2401 of the Student Commons Building at Heartland Community College. I'm media technologist Tom Corcoran, and this is the IDC Podcast, episode number 49, for the week of January 14th through the 19th of 2008. Thank you to all who attended and presented at the Spring 2008 Heartland Faculty Best Practices event on January 10th. If the presentations from this day sparked an idea you would like to pursue regarding educational technology, the Gradebook Project, WebCT, or other instructional development opportunities, such as writing across the college, classroom discussion, or using case studies, stop into the IDC and we can assist. Terry Mullen is available to assist you with using the Gradebook Project in your course assessment and to provide feedback to your students about specific learning outcomes. Jean Marie Taylor is here to assist you with all things WebCT related. You'll find her hours and contact information available on the IDC website. And of course, I'm here to assist you with educational technology, web, graphic, and multimedia design needs. Feel free to stop by my office or the Instructional Development Center lab for assistance with any of these areas. With the start of a new semester, I thought I'd take the time to remind you that you can find an archive of past IDC podcasts, transcripts of all of our podcasts, and information about podcasting and other instructional development resources on our IDC website at www.heartland.edu/IDC. In this week's tips and tricks section, I thought I would begin a multi-part podcast over the course of this semester on the topic of Web 2.0. What is it? What does it mean? How can you use it in higher education? Each week I will be presenting a different Web 2.0 topic and how it can be used in education as a communication and interaction tool to get students more engaged in the material and hopefully developing in them a desire to become lifelong learners. So what is Web 2.0? Web 2.0 is a shift away from the internet being used to statically display information like a one-way street. With traditional websites, the information is simply presented in a textbook-like manner. There's nothing wrong with that. And the user has very little interaction or say in how the information is presented. There could be something wrong with that as it pertains to education and learning. What Web 2.0 does is it gives the user more interaction with the information. How information is being presented, the ability to comment on other people's work, the ability to access your own information, and even entire applications from any computer. These are just a handful of ways the World Wide Web is changing. Hence the name Web 2.0, as this new shift is thought of as a second incarnation of the World Wide Web. Ultimately, education can be thought of as structured communication and opportunities for interaction with the material being presented. Traditional websites are excellent for structured communication. Think about how often you access a website to look up a definition, information about a product or a service offered, a time an event starts, or even using the web for entertainment. Everything from email to YouTube videos exist as forms of communication on the web. Unfortunately, that is where most websites stop. All structured communication, but no interaction by the end user. Basically, most websites are just electronic copies of books, magazines, and periodicals. And Hypertext Transfer Protocol, or HTTP, is just that, a way simply to display and link pieces of information to each other. However, Web 2.0 websites tend to do both areas well. They not only convey information to be shared, think an encyclopedia, but also offer opportunities for engagement with the material. An example of a Web 2.0 site is MediaShift by PBS, available at www.pbs.org/MediaShift. This website is a blog where journalist Mark Glazer tracks how these new forms of media, like blogs and podcasting, are changing our society and how we interact. Viewers of this blog are allowed to make comments on the stories being reported on and even allows for open-ended discussion under a section called Your Take, where users can make comments on timely topics. The site even provides an RSS, or what's called Real Simple Syndication, feed so that you can subscribe to the blog. That way, whenever new information is posted to the blog, you can check your subscription feed, and the new postings will appear there. Each of these methods, RSS feeds, blogging, and allowing for user comments, provides for more interaction and are prime examples of Web 2.0 functions, although they're just the beginning of Web 2.0 interaction. So how can this be used in higher education? Well, it should be obvious that if much of education is structured communication and interaction with material, that Web 2.0 should be an excellent tool or set of tools that can be mixed and matched to meet the needs of virtually any course. As a first example, let's take blogging. The term blog is a shortened version of the words web log and is used by everyone from the average everyday user up to professional journalists to make comments on everything from their favorite television, movies, and books to political opinions and timely and often hotly contested news topics. The big power behind blogging is the fact that it is extremely easy to set up a blog, and after it is set up, anyone can communicate or publish their ideas regardless of their age, their education, level of website design knowledge. No longer do you need to be a published author to get your voice out to the masses. More people contributing to the global or societal dialogue sounds like democracy to me. Blogging could be used as an excellent tool by an instructor to get students interacting and engaging material. Some uses for blogging could include having your students set up a blog in an English composition class or any course where papers and writing is taking place as part of the curriculum. Then have the students post their observations, written materials, or research papers up to their own blog. That way they can use their blog as a sort of electronic learning portfolio of their own work they can access from any place with an internet connection, and they can use the blog even after the semester has ended. In this way, the students will see that their learning extends outside of the classroom and even across semesters and continues into the future even after they've graduated. Also, peer reviewing is made much easier. Students could pair up, exchange blog URLs, and then each student could make comments on the other's blog, suggesting changes, revisions, and developing critical thinking skills. And since blogs are freely accessible websites on the internet, teachers and parents can check on their student or child's progress. And blogs tend to be time-stamped with the date and time of the posting or comments. So if peer review is due on a certain date, as the instructor, you can check your student's blog, make sure that the appropriate timestamp within the due date range of the assignment. Using blogs in higher education meets several of the core learning outcomes, including developing effective skills at communicating and critical thinking skills. Blogging is also one area that many of today's students are already familiar with and even use regularly, either creating their own blog postings or reading and commenting on other blogs they visit regularly. One potential downside to blogging is that because there is no real editorial process, much of the information contained in blogs could be misinformation or misleading. Students could read information on a blog and take it as fact just because it exists in print on the internet. However, just like with any research source, it can be explained how much or little weight should be ascribed to the information on a blog, similar to describing how important tertiary, secondary, or primary sources of information are from other research sources on the web or in traditional libraries. A few places to get started with blogging and actually setting up a blog are www.edublogs.org, www.blogger.com, or www.wordpress.org. Each of these is free, easy to set up, and EDU Blogs was specifically created with educators in mind, so they're advertisement free. Blogger.com is owned by Google, so if you have a Google email address, also known as a Gmail address, or have signed up for other Google services, you can use your existing login and password to create and access a Blogger.com blog. With WordPress, you can even set up a blog on your own web host so that you can have a blog with any available URL, such as heartlandblog.com or whatever name you choose. Each of those websites has information on what blogging is and what you can do with it if you want to find out more information on blogging. eduBlogs.org specifically has a link on their homepage to an article about 10 ways to use your blog with students, full of additional ideas on blogging and education. If you need assistance with setting up a blog or have questions, feel free to contact me. My contact information is listed on the Heartland Community College Instructional Development Center website at www.heartland.edu/IDC. Next week, we'll continue with the Web 2.0 discussion and talk a bit about wikis. Thanks for listening to this episode of the IDC Podcast. IDC Podcasts are updated weekly with events happening in and news about the Instructional Development Center at Heartland Community College, as well as educational technology tips and tricks. If you have questions, comments, or in need of assistance with the services we offer in the IDC, check our contact information on the IDC website at www.heartland.edu/IDC/contact.jsp. That's all for this week's IDC podcast. Signing off until next time from the Instructional Development Center. Have a great week.